We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Well, we got into a conversation last night, and this topic of long ball came up, of just thinking about entrepreneurship in terms of the long run. And it reminded me of this thing that happened a few years back. I actually went this morning and kind of looked through email archives and pieced the exact dates together, but I knew this had happened close together. So April 3rd of 2011, that's almost 5 years ago, and this was just less than 2 months before I basically sent a cold email to the owner, the current owner of Hittail, or the then owner of Hittail, and offered to buy it. And so it's early April, and I had just listened to The Snowball, which is the biography of Warren Buffett. And I remember it having such an impact on me. I was actually kind of like upset. It like really stirred something up in me. And you and I were having a conversation in this office, and I said, I need to do something bigger, but I don't really know what. And this was basically 10 months after our youngest son, who's now almost 6 years old, was born. And I'd been hanging out with him for the majority of that 10 months, right? Working a day or two per week. And I was having a great time doing it. But somehow something was like building inside me and like a bit flipped. And I was suddenly desperate to work on something larger and more interesting and more challenging. And I felt like I needed a struggle, right? I needed to start that hardcore learning again. I guess the big thing is I realized I wasn't done, in quotes. I think once I'd moved away from consulting and had started making a living full-time from products, I kind of felt like I had made it and that was my end goal. And I had done that for a couple years. And then there was this sudden heavy realization that I wasn't done.
What was it about the book, do you think, that triggered that in you?
It was fascinating to listen to Warren Buffett's story. He starts off as like a kid, basically. I think he's like 6 years old, and he gets $5 from some, like his parents or his grandparents as a gift, and he won't spend any of it. And then he starts paper routes, and then he like eventually gets to $1,000, which is a heck of a lot of money. This is what I'm trying to think if it's the 50s, 40s or the 50s, heck of a lot of money at that time. And he winds up buying like a small parcel of land, a few acres of farmland, and he builds that up. Someone else is working it. He's not toiling away, but he just builds himself up. And then eventually he has a few thousand dollars and then tens of thousands. And then it was just this incredible story of someone doing something over the long term. Like he just thought in terms of decades, and he knew that he could take whatever he had today and double that in X amount of years and continue to build this snowball. And that's the title of the book.
He had this amazing future orientation.
Yep. And the willingness to just put in the time over the long term, because he wasn't getting rich overnight.
So your epiphany 5 years ago was that you wanted to do something bigger and have kind of re-enter the struggle to continue to learn, to continue to try and build something. Were you imagining playing Warren Buffett, snowball, long ball at that point? Or were you just like, I need to do something bigger because I'm kind of bored?
I think it was the latter. I was bored. I wanted to do something bigger. I think the long ball idea has come to me in retrospect, now that I've gone through the Hittail stuff and then I'm now doing Drip. I'm looking back and thinking, oh yeah, this really is a journey. And I think kind of wished I had looked at it as a decade or two long journey from the start. But instead, I think I had envisioned, you know, I read the 4-Hour Work Week and started blogging and kind of going after the dream of quitting your job, right? Of having that freedom. And once I got there, that seemed like the end goal. And I guess it's a little bit about arrival fallacy, what we've talked about in the past, where I felt like that was it. I had arrived, just basically making a full-time living from my products and not really having a boss. But that wasn't the end goal for me. I realized, I mean, I think after enough downtime, I've realized more about myself. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs are this way. It's like, there's not going to be an end goal, because your end goal really is to perpetually be challenged and perpetually be learning and building things.
I think there's a level of self-realization, though, that's gone into that? Because many of the entrepreneurs that I talk to are very much enamored with the big idea, the overnight skyrocketing success. And I think that's an attractive myth, too. That's an attractive picture that people are chasing. How would you have done it differently if you had decided that you were playing long ball from the beginning?
I don't know. Perhaps I'm kidding myself, but I feel like I would have maybe had more patience, because when it didn't happen right away, I thought, oh, this doesn't work. This isn't going to work for me. I've always wanted to get to the end result instantly instead of thinking of it as this longer journey, you know, this career. I mean, it's a career of entrepreneurship. I think that far and wide, the most common success stories of people who start their own companies are the ones who do it for a long time. And I think we see counterexamples to that. And we see some people come in and build whatever it is, Flappy Bird, or you see them get some lottery ticket win, but those are such the exception to the rule. And I guess that thought of kind of thinking about it as this instant experience where you're going to work yourself to death for 1 to 2 to 3 years and have this big lottery ticket win, startup lottery, I think 37 Signals calls it, and then have enough money to carry you through for the rest of your life from that one big win. It does happen. It's just such a big gamble. And if it doesn't pan out, it totally sucks. Like, I know dozens of people who have tried this. I'm sure there are hundreds, if not thousands, who have either worked, been early employees at a startup, or they've started their own, and you just pour yourself into it and you raise funding and you go after the gold. And if it doesn't work, you just have nothing, right? It totally goes away. I've seen people do this multiple times, actually. And I feel really, really bad, because you're not building anything. You have no fallback. I guess it's just a more risky approach with a higher chance for reward. And it harkens back to stuff that both Warren Buffett and his co-founder, Charlie Munger, say. They want lower risk, but like a better chance that you're going to make some money rather than this massive payoff. It's just so much more predictable and repeatable and conservative.
And it's based on having a perspective of your career and yourself that is emerging over the future. So you talked about reconceptualizing your entrepreneurial career as a journey and as a career, not like the one success that you're going to have, but something that is unfolding over time. And it sounds like a big part of that is finding what you're good at and what you love and being willing to do that kind of day in and day out for a longer period of time, sometimes with bigger numbers and smaller numbers and bigger companies and smaller companies, but the same kind of process of who you are in your work is consistent over time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You said finding what you're good at and just hammering away at that. It's like showing up every day. And I think there are a lot of examples of this, of people like a Warren Buffett, who really he kind of has one gift. He happens to be really good at something, and he just has doubled down on that thing for 30, 40, 50 years, and it's gotten him to where he is. And I'm not saying I'm going to be a Warren Buffett. I'm not saying you should strive to have billions of dollars, because that's not really the point. It's more of this thought of these two words that I love and I have written in my notebook and I think about often. And I put these words together after reading How the World Sees You by Sally Hogshead. And it was kind of saying, like, come up with your, it's like your two-word slogan. It's kind of like two or three words. I think, like, just do it would be Nike's or whatever. And I just thought, and I went through all these exercises and I couldn't come up with it. And I eventually stumbled upon these two words, and it's relentless execution. And that has become my personal mantra, I guess, of just, like, show up every day and relentlessly execute on your strengths. And whenever I hear one of these long-term success stories that wasn't luck, and I mean, I hate to throw luck around. Luck is involved in all of our stuff. So I don't want to say that if you had luck, that it's a bad thing or any of that, but I don't think you should count on it. And so if you listen to the story of, let's say, Twitter coming up, there's a bit of luck in that, right? It's the big startup thing. But if you hear a story of a Warren Buffett or maybe of a Henry Ford or other people who've kind of built themselves up over nothing, it's like they would have done it with or without much luck, because they just relentlessly executed on their strengths. So I've come to really respect those stories of the people who just came back again and again. You know, well, another interesting story is Masters of Doom, which are these two programmers who built this video game company. And they did have luck because they hit the industry right at this specific time. But one of the programmers, John Carmack, just all he did was write code and build video game engines. And he was one of the, if not the best in the world at it, because he did it every day and he relentlessly executed on that goal. And it eventually just puts you in the right place at the right time. And sometimes executing on that will make you a Warren Buffett. And then in other situations, you may not hit the right luck, or you may not be in the right industry. You know, maybe you're doing really good at software instead of at investing, so you're not going to be a billionaire. But I do believe that if you focus on that and you do show up every day and get things done, that eventually this stuff pays off in one way or another. Do you feel like in your career, you're thinking about it this way?
No. I mean, relentless execution is not my jam.
Right. And that's a good question. Like, if it's not someone's thing, is long ball still relevant? Like, is it still relevant to you?
I think long ball is always relevant because we are people that are developing over the course of our entire lives. So who you are right now and the decisions that you make right now and who you choose to be, like what you cultivate in yourself, will be with you for the rest of your life. So long ball extends beyond career. It's much more about, or also includes, identity and values and, you know, who you are in the bigger picture of your life. So relentless execution isn't how I would, it's not what I would say about my personal mantra. It's not what I am about in my life as much. It's funny, when you brought up this topic, I had like a little bit of an internal negative reaction to it. And I think some of my reticence about the topic is that I guess my own struggle with how much I am about relentless execution or long ball in my career versus long ball in my life more broadly.
Ooh, like, that's a good point.
You know, this deep investment that we're making, both of us are making in our children and in our marriage and for me in my health or in my sanity. And I think, again, this issue of how do you be a whole person over the course of your life. And that's why relentless execution doesn't work for me, because I can't be relentless about one thing. But I'm never going to be an internet billionaire, right? Like, I'm not going to be Warren Buffett. I'm not going to be a grand success story in that tradition. And sometimes I feel a little bit like an underperformer because I definitely have ranks to climb in my career if I make those choices. But I also feel like my long ball is so much more about how I'm going to feel at the end of my life and about what I've invested in. And for me, at this point, it's not relentless execution in my career. It's, I guess, cultivating presence. It's about being kind. It's about investing in people. It's about being successful and using my resources and my skills and my abilities. But I don't have that ambition. That's not the long ball goal that I'm chasing right now.
I think it's really good that you point that out, because I don't think long ball equivalates with relentless execution. I mean, as you're pointing out, it doesn't work like that for you. And I think there are tons of people where those two things don't line up. And I think you've made the choice to invest in, like you said, your life as a whole. And I think cultivating presence is actually maybe closer to your mantra than relentless execution. But I think that you're in it for the long haul in terms of cultivating presence. Like, you looked and said, look, I'm going to get certified in yoga because I want to do it often, and I want to be able to help other people with it, and I want to integrate that in my career. And that isn't necessarily relentless execution, right? I mean, relentless execution is such an aggressive kind of ambitious thing, and that's not for everyone. I hope I didn't portray it as that. I think that's the impact it had on me at the time when I really had a desire to level up. But even for me, I mean, there have been times since then where that isn't necessarily what I'm doing every day, right?
I mean, practically, you and I are more similar about this than different. It's not like you're slogging away at your desk every day and I'm out growing flowers and, you know, like painting. We both get a lot of things done and we're both pretty present in our relationships. I think we just come to it from different sides, maybe, or have different ways of talking about it. But I think that's always a struggle I have with like the Warren Buffett story. And I know it's amazing and it's clearly been really influential for you, but I'm not sure that I'm willing to trade the success that he had for the kind of like personal life that he had.
Well, yeah, that's another good topic. I'm not either. And if you look at Elon Musk's biography and Henry Ford and Steve Jobs and all these titans who've invented this amazing thing, Benjamin Franklin, they all had train wrecks for personal lives because their one focus is on this execution of of their strength, right? Of they're so devoted to this single cause that they don't pay attention to the life or the family or the relationships around them. And that's where you and I are on the same page. We're not willing to sacrifice relationships for the benefit of success, right?
Right.
You know, there's a difference, I guess, that I should call out, like relentless execution with Warren Buffett really sacrificed a lot of things. I relentlessly execute for the 40 hours a week that I work. And then when I'm at home or we're traveling or we're hanging out with the family, I'm not doing that anymore, you know, and I'm taking a break. And I think it makes like achieving and growing and learning and being challenged makes me happy during the week. And then that helps me overflow into having a more happy, like a happier personal life.
Or you can translate that into your personal life too. There's certainly a lot to be like learned and achieved trying to figure out how to parent well or how to surf again now that you're 40.
Indeed. We just got wetsuits.
Whoop, whoop.
It's been fun.
Maybe it's a little bit of a leap, but this conversation reminds me about the talk that you just gave at MicroConf and the way that you outlined, I don't know, what did you call them? Like the secret sauce of success?
Yeah, the four unfair advantages for faster SaaS growth.
Oh man, you should have called it secret sauce.
For success. That would have been awesome.
So the four elements of the secret sauce, you know, your network, your expertise, who knows you, and being early.
Being early, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were kind of the four. I looked at a bunch of bootstrapped or self-funded SaaS apps, and I looked at the ones that have grown unusually fast over the past several years and kind of compared them to the greater cohort, and really could only find these four unfair advantages that the ones that grew faster had.
So maybe part of long ball is kind of what secret sauce you're relying on or what secret sauce you're cultivating. So whether you're cultivating your network or your audience or your growth expertise, you're choosing how to invest in the time that you spend in work.
Yeah, that's right. And I think I've kind of liked the idea of the following your strengths, you know, or doubling down on your strengths. I know that there's other ways to do it in terms of shoring up your weaknesses, but I think that my maximum achievement has happened when I have focused on, for me, it's I'm not particularly good at like the innovation stuff. So I'm probably not going to be early to a space, and networking doesn't come naturally to me either. So I've really tried to focus, whether intentionally or unintentionally, I've focused on kind of who knows me, which is audience building, and then just learning more about how to grow things. And I think when I've focused on those things and when I've, you know, started launch products or started ideas within those spheres, it's been just an easier and a faster growing process. And it tends to perhaps be more fun, I think, because the slog can be long without that when you're starting from scratch. I mean, I'm just really an advocate of playing to your strengths most of the time.
I think the other word that I just thought of that comes to mind when we talk about long ball is the word legacy, and the sense in which you are building something that will potentially outlive you, whether it's a company or a pile of money or a family, or, you know, you're building something with the time that you have in your life. You're investing in something, you're making something, and hopefully that thing becomes bigger than you, or it outlives you, or it stays longer. And so you're choosing what you're making, not just the overnight success and the big dollars and the big exit, but something that you really want to be the thing that goes on your Wikipedia page after you die, or you want to be the thing that you are known and remembered for.
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, there was a section in Chris Gilopo's book, or I think it was Art of Nonconformity, and it was later on in the book, and he says basically you're going to get to the point where you do have freedom, and then the question is what's next. And he talks about legacy, and I remember when I read that, I was not there yet. You know, I was not thinking at all about legacy, and just kind of like, whatever, I don't need to care about that. But I've been thinking more about it lately. Actually, I know I have, especially over the past couple of years, just in terms of what is it that's going to live on after you're gone. And I mean, I think for me, it's like the community, you know, it's the community of bootstrappers and software people. And just, I my hope is that's probably one of the most important things that I've done personally and that I'm really proud of. How about you? Have you given it thought at this point?
I think my hope is that I leave behind me a trail of people who are more well than they would have been had they not come across my path. So a set of patients, a set of students, a set of people who got a new idea or felt cared about or learned how to better take care of themselves as a result of my role in their life. So it won't be something that gets written down easily, but it's an investment in lots of people over lots of years who I'm hoping to have a small positive impact on.
Yeah, that's cool.
To make their lives a little bit better.
That's neat to be able to have that working in day to day. It takes decades to build a large number of those, but it's like within your first year, you helped a few people and then you're just kind of building on top of that for your entire career.
And I don't think you have to delay the conversation or the thoughts about legacy until you begin to get a little bit older. I mean, I think part of your desire to have started your career with a longer perspective is part of this legacy question. Like, what if we all began from the end? What if we all began with a sense of not only where we're going, but who we want to be and what mark we want to leave in the world? And I think that's the singular focus. That's the way of prioritizing, whether it's relentless execution or some other phrase that you have of deciding, this is how I'm going to spend my time because this is what I'm doing with my life. Any take-home points you want to end with?
I guess it's like, I would encourage a listener to think of entrepreneurship as a decade-long or multi-decade journey and not an experience where it's this short hit and you're going to do it quickly and then retire. Because I just don't think that's how most of us are made. I also think that if cultivating presence feels like your mantra, then seize that. And you can play long ball with that as your mantra. If relentless execution is your mantra, then seize that. I think there are different ways to go about this. And I think finding your strengths and kind of finding what fits and feels natural to you, and then just leaning into that, even if it may not be the way that a mentor or someone you're kind of looking at has had their success, but you can find it in different ways. Like, there may not be a model for it. And I think just kind of showing up every day and investing in that is a good way to think about playing long ball.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.